The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's good, Podcastville? You found the Bystander Podcast. Today, we're welcoming Robert Chelsea. How you doing, Robert?
I'm doing good, Bill. Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, because you have an incredible heart, an incredible story, and anything I can do to help destigmatize organ donation and get the word out, to be empowered to have empathy for others and stand strong and give love to all, I think it can come through a story like yours.
Well, let's share it, and hopefully those that have ears to hear will hear.
All right. Well, let's bring people up to speed with your story that have yet to hear it or know anything about your situation.
Okay.
I'll let you tell it, because I think you speak eloquently about it. And I'm going to get out of the way and not ask too many questions until you're done telling the beginning of the story here.
Okay. Well, just jump right in wherever you like. Basically, I was the same regular guy until about 10 years ago, an automobile accident, drunk driver, swerved across the freeway, and my car happened to be in the shoulder of the freeway because it had overheated.
So you went on the left side of it, and oncoming traffic came across?
No, I was on the far right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I called a friend of mine to see if he could give me a hand, bring a hose or something, because I figured that's all it was. And while talking with him, I saw the car swerving over. Turned out to be a drunk driver. And he just drove right down his shoulder as if he was on the regular freeway lane, and he ran straight into me. And so
is that from behind or in front?
From behind.
Okay.
My car went up in the air and came down, and then it, about probably 2 or 3 seconds later, it blew up. So I seemed like I was told to go to my left. And if I can remember, it was audible enough for me to clearly understand that my instructions was to go to my left. And so that's what I did. Seemed like I was going through a long tunnel of fire. Well, of course, it was only a couple of steps away. It just felt like it was much further. So as I was getting out the car, a new friend of mine, better known as a Samaritan, his name is Richard Robles. He was right there. He saw everything, and he assisted me getting out the car. And we went and checked to see if the guy was okay. And then he helped me to go to a safe area. And in his attempt to assist me to find a safe area, he said he tried to take my arms, because my arms were melting. So he had to take a belt buckle and put it around my waist and slowly escort me to an area. I was still unconscious all that time. And when the first responders came, I told them who I was and who to call. I just figured that somebody would come and pick me up from the hospital. I after being checked out. I didn't realize that I was so severely burned. Anyway, when I was escorted to the gurney, the ambulance, I remember sitting down and laying back, figuring somebody would meet me at the airport, the hospital.
Yeah.
And anyway, when I woke up, it was 6 months later.
So you were in a coma that wasn't induced. It happened from the accident.
Yes, that's correct.
Wow. And how burned were you from this accident?
Well, it just depends on who you talk to. Some say 35, 45, 60, 65, 70. The burns pretty much covered my whole face, head, feet. But naturally, all of it wasn't completely burned. Somewhere, when you see me, you'll see grass in certain spots. So I don't know, but a great deal was covered in the fire.
So when you woke up, what did you find out about the six-month coma? What was going on with you?
I didn't realize I had been in a coma. So many people insisted that I was in a coma, that I'm a miracle man, and God just saw fit to bring me alive after all that time. And I, it took about a week or two before I realized that I was actually in a coma. All during that time, I could tell you a little bit about my coma experience. I'm not sure how much time we have.
We got all day for you, Robert.
Yeah, well, during the time that, now that I know it was a coma, I had a friend. He was so reliable, so easy to talk with. He was my confidant. And I'd ask him, about my daughter, how she's doing, and he was able to answer all of my inquiries in a way that he assured me that he knew who I was talking about. And it just seemed like we were just best buddies through all of this. So I had no clue that there was days and nights passing. I just knew that, I had a real good friend and we always had a real good, pleasant time together. And when the nurses and doctors and friends started telling me I was in a coma, in my mind, I was thinking they were just adding to my day. You know how you have a nice day and then all of a sudden some new friends come around and your family come around and so they're just, you're in a good company. And then someone else drops over. And then someone else drops over. And someone else, so that's kind of how I felt. But they all told me, you're in a coma all this time. I'm thinking, wait a minute, you guys just started coming over. I couldn't imagine that.
You couldn't quite comprehend that that had happened?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
now, during that time, my lips had been burned off and part of my tongue and other parts of my body. And, it was severe. But I, by God's grace, I did not realize it, because when I woke up, I had no pain whatsoever. I could see, because I was still in the bed, the sheets are over you, blankets and so on. And I could see my arms and my legs, that they were all grafted up.
Why do you think you felt no pain? Don't know.
Well, who else or what else could I attribute that to?
Your faith.
It certainly couldn't be because oh, I just can handle a lot of pain.
No.
I mean, how far does tolerance go?
Right.
But fortunately, I was just simply covered. And as a result of that, I hesitate sometimes to share that because, you know, it's man will rationalize anything, especially something not just incomprehensible, but something that he refuses to accept because he can't intellectually figure that out. You can't use a slide rule on this. It's not scientific in man's mind. But what do you know about science? I mean, all those planets weren't created by science, nor was the sun or the moon that we're closest to. So, but he goes right back to science and, oh, yeah, I gotta have proof. Well, have as much proof as you want. But I know I'm so grateful that I did not have any pain. And hopefully, I don't think Daniel was thrown in the lion's den. He never got bit.
Mm.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown in a fiery furnace, and they never got singed. We know that Moses was in the wilderness for 40 years, and they had the same suits of clothing and shoes for all those years. So, yes, some things are far beyond
our comprehension.
Yeah.
Did you have anything amputated or lost in this? What happened there?
Yes, during the coma, they had to take a lot of stuff and move things around, you know. They had to take out 2/3 of my intestines, things like that. And after I woke up, then we realized a lot of things. I had to have a couple of amputations on my feet because they had turned gangrene. And the same with my fingers, a couple of these fingers. They had, you know, the different things happened as a result of the other accident and the burns. Obviously, the accident caused a lot of jarring. I don't know how much or how severe that was because I guess I was healed during that time. I can see remnants of what, like my thumb, this thumb goes all a weird angle.
Mm-hmm.
My hands are cadaver skin.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they had to put this on just because there's so much fluid that comes out when you're burned. They have to cover it up some kind of way. And in this case, they used cadaver skin. So that's one of the reasons why I'm here today talking with you. There's the major benefits that has happened for me as a result of receiving a transplant. And others have donated their loved one's body, or the individual has donated their body, to allow a person like myself in a time of great need to be able to cover my hands up. And you, if you ever notice my hands, fingers, they're growing like another person's. My nails never grew like this, and they grow much, much faster. And they grow a lot different.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When you had your intestine removed, how does that change your diet and how you eat?
It changes in all kinds of different ways. Yeah. My portions are less, and there's a lot that would irritate me, like tomato products, onions, and lemon.
How you do with mushrooms?
Acidic, mushrooms, avocado, things like that, I have to avoid. I mean, I eat a little bit, kind of a little bit once in a while, but it's not recommended. For that matter, red meat is not recommended either. But I was mainly a fish and chicken person anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got a barbecue coming up, don't forget to invite
me. I love it. I won't. We need to get you out here, period.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to come.
Yeah, Seattle needs a voice like yours.
I used to go in and out of Seattle. I had the Western States for several years in the 80s, 90s. And Seattle, I'd fly into SeaTac and make my way between the Seattle area. Let's see, there was another, the headquarters for Intermac. That's a...
Not familiar with that business?
Intermac. They're the barcode company. They're the ones that created barcodes. I used to work with them for a while. Anyway, so yes, I'm very familiar with the area years back, but I've always longed to have a reason to go back. I'll tell you a little secret. I don't know what your audience would think of this, but I was married, and I, to protect myself from this old knucklehead thinking the wrong kind of thoughts, I'd always set my, wherever I went for that matter, I tried to set my appointments up in that city along with a basketball game or football game, usually basketball games, track meets, things like that. And so that way, during my time that I had to spend waiting for a customer or rather than eating dinner by myself in a hotel,
mm-hmm.
a game. So that was a way of occupying my time in innocence without looking for trouble.
Are you married now, currently?
No, I'm officially divorced. Fortunately, it was for the right reasons. My wife has a condition, and as a result of this particular condition, it's so rare that it's very difficult for her to have anyone around her. She really needs this. I don't know if you ever heard of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And anyway, it's a condition where, you know, you are paranoid, just various things that you know.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So as a result of that, my daughter and I, we would go and visit her mother. Mm-hmm. Just opposite, you know, the father usually comes and picks the child up for every other week or so. But for me, I was fortunate. My daughter lived with me from junior high school on. And mm-hmm. of course, we made sure.
Guys must be very close.
Yeah. So all those years, even though we were married, we weren't together. During my accident, my wife was so kind. In spite of her own physical and mental condition, she signed off on every single surgery. And it exceeded 30 to 40 surgeries while I was in a coma. She signed off to keep me alive because I was coded 3 or 4 times. So our relationship has always been good. But about 5 years ago, and we're talking like, we got married in 1980. So in 2016 or 17, I asked her, since I knew I was going to have the face transplant, I we agreed to just let's make this official so she wouldn't have to go through the pressure of signing and releasing all of that she did valiantly. But it wouldn't be fair if something like that occurred during my transplant. So that's why we officially divorced to take away her obligations.
30 or 40 surgeries, and then you had, you're the first African-American to have a face transplant. How many hours and how many surgeries was a face transplant? I don't even understand how that's possible. I mean, it's an incredible thing of science and medicine and your stick-to-itiveness and ability to believe in yourself.
I don't believe in myself. What do I have to offer?
But strength.
I trust God. I mean, how far can even my strength go? Really? I mean, I'm not Superman. But the comfort that I have been provided far exceeds any of my capacity or strength or belief or trust or faith. I was privileged to have this experience and have an overseer that would care so much to allow me to be painless, to provide the very best of care in terms of the person that did my face transplant. He was the world-renowned transplant surgeon in the whole world. At the most notable medical center in the world, Harvard University. So, and for a black man to be escorted into a circumstance like this, and others sign off, my insurance, I have Kaiser insurance, you know, how many people would you imagine would allow, you know, you're going to lose money with a person that has a face tag. Nobody else, they can't make that money back on medicine because there's nobody else that would require that kind of medication.
Are you on some type of lifetime medication now?
Yes, I am. I take the same medication that the majority of transplant recipients take, liver, lung, kidney, heart. We all take similar medication. Now, the amount and so on may vary, but we all take, and it's like very, very expensive. But it just seemed like God arranged where not only did Medicare take care of X amount, but Kaiser agreed, this is after going through about a year and a half of ups and downs and red tape, and but they agreed to eat the rest of the cost that Medicare would not pay.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, who could have designed that? I wouldn't dare even request such a privilege. But it was provided for me.
It's still very rare and young. I think face transplants are 20 years young, basically.
2005 was the first.
And there's less than 50 in the whole world done?
That's correct.
And you're the only black man that has it done, correct? Now, is there different genetics and such that you have to take into consideration that it makes it more difficult? Or is it certain stigmatization against organ donorship?
Well, there's all of the above. These questions are very good questions. My ethnicity has a great deal to do with how they make adjustments. Now, remember, we're not talking about black surgeons that would have at least some idea of how my body operates. Give you an example. In the journals, medical journals, for face transplants and things like that, they have written that there are certain signs you can look for potential rejection, transplant rejection. One of the signs is blue lips. Well, that doesn't apply to me. Another sign is white knuckles. Pale face. Redness of face. Pink face. So for me, unless it's someone of my own culture and color, they are not used to, surgeons, they're not used to looking for signs of rejection from me because they're not familiar with it.
So what are the new signs that they've discovered regarding rejection and you being a person of color?
Well, they are, I'm sure they're learning a little here and there, but remember, I'm the only one. So it's not like they have a lot to judge from.
Compare it to, yeah.
And the others, it's so much easier, and it's still not easier because it's only 47 of us in the world. So it's still easier, though, for them to physically look and see certain things. Whereas for me, it almost has to get to a critical level where they can say, oh, well, wait, let's check this. We didn't see this. And so, fortunately, it hasn't been so serious that, and I live across the country, and I live in the Los Angeles area, and all of the face transplants that were done were in the New England or northern area. So the communications, the clinic visits, things like that, I'm one of the rare people that live all the way across the country.
And do you have to go in often for testing and evaluation and such?
Well, as it turns out, my the standard evaluation process that was established before my transplant was it would be every 3 months, and then every 6 months, and then every year. But I got my transplant in July, the summer of 2019. Well, 90 days later was COVID. I'm on the West Coast, so I can't fly back and forth to get checked. And the hospital, the restrictions that was. So that threw off the schedule that they normally had for face transplant patients. And we have yet to get it on any regular. Fortunately, the doctors, nurses, all the specialty disciplines, including the pharmacists, they all from Kaiser have been not only cooperative, but have exceeded any expectation that Boston would have expected.
Mm.
And as a result of that, it hasn't been the need for me to have to go as often as I should under normal protocol.
And does insurance take care of your travel?
No. No, the expenses are still extremely high. Yeah. And, of course, you're looking at paying a rent at your own place. And
place that you're visiting.
The month, it was $7,000 a month for 90 days in Boston. But bearing in mind, I was going to tell you two things.
Shoot.
In terms of finance, I'll come back to that in a minute. The other 46 patients that received a face transplant, some of them were full face transplants, some were partial. The cutoff for evaluating whether they could be a viable candidate to receive a face transplant was age 50. I was already about 62 or 3 when we started talking about face transplants. So that's what, why I'm at least 10 years older than anyone else that ever had a face transplant.
So let's bring people up to speed here. You were kind of out of the hospital after 3 years, and then they came to you that they had found a donor, or were they talking about facial reconstruction and a transplant prior to that? Was there a lot of hesitation on your behalf?
Well, what happened, I was actually in the hospital a year and a half. The first 6 months was, you know, in a coma. But I still had to stay because my vital signs, my heart, lung, liver, and so on, they still had not shown any improvement. So I was actually in about six different locations, not different, four different locations, two locations twice. From August 2013 to December, I was at UCI, University of California, Irvine, Burn Center. They're the ones that did a great job with saving my life. But after they did as much as they could do, they sent me to a long-term facility called Kindred in December 2013. I woke up 2 months later in February 2014. And that's when we discovered there was all kinds of other things that needed to be done, including rehabilitation. So they sent me to another special place called Rancho Los Amigos. I was there for 3 weeks, but I wasn't strong enough to recover or start the recovery process as we had hoped. So they sent me back to UCI, University of Irvine, because my head had yet to be fully grafted. It had all kind of stuff all over. And my amputations had to take place. So after I went there, of course, they attempted to rehabilitate me a little bit. Then they sent me to the long-term facility again, where I had a little bit more therapy and so on. And that's when that overall took about a year and a half. So once I got out at the end of 2014, I had to find insurance, because who's going to cover you, you know? You're all burned up. And Kaiser, about 5 or 6 months later, I had to pay. I was self-employed, and I did have some residual income commissions that the factory could. I got all this time that I was in the accident, burned and all that, the factory continued to handle all my orders, all the customers, shipping, receiving, billing, and all the commissions were sent to my daughter. For that matter, even to this very day.
It's incredible.
Yeah. That's J.P. Cook is my company. And that, who else could ask for that? Now, during that time, whenever other people, this is not first just for me, but I'm sure others that have been in challenging circumstances, you lose everything. What do you mean by everything? Your bank account, they don't know where you are. The IRS don't know where you are. The state rent, they don't know where you are. Your bill collectors, they have no clue where you are. So they shut you down, they put liens on you, they put levies to collect their money. So it is It's quite. So you lose your, if you have a mortgage, that's gone. After a year and a half, you have no way of communicating. Oh, my cell phone and personal computer, all that was all burned up in the fire. So any customer names and numbers and all of that, that's gone. So there was a great deal that just is completely wiped away. And as a result of that, you have to still find a way. Fortunately, Obamacare kicked in and took care of everything that we could.
You're lucky in more ways than one.
Do you really think that was luck? Now, it's okay, you know. But
yeah, I think, you know, these things, these dominoes that could keep falling in your favor, it's fortunate for sure. Maybe luck's not the best way to describe it, but it's.
It's okay.
It's good.
So I'm just highlighting. This needs to just highlight.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of that, the emphasis on expenses, that the expenses just didn't start from the transplant. That in itself becomes a nightmare, because there are medical expenses that are outrageous. One particular medication in 2016, we had to test it to make sure my body could handle it. It cost $11,300 for a 60-day supply.
That's outrageous.
That was in 2016.
Yeah. And do you still take it now?
Oh, yeah. That's what, that was a mandatory for the rest of my life. But they gave that to me, the manufacturer, but they give you a waiver and say, we will let you have this for a year at no charge. But after that, you have to pay for it. So in order for me to get tested, I had to sign a waiver for that first year. I got the test, you know, the test, and it came out okay. But now after that, I had to pay for it. Well, when I say, oh, of course, my since I was able to acquire self-employment insurance, I had to pay for that. And then eventually, Kaiser took me on. Of course, I had to pay for that too, but it wasn't as much than if you're paying for it completely out of your pocket. I just have a very high copay. It always exceeds anywhere between $5 to $550 a month.
Wow.
That's just the copay. And you look, anyway. And so, yeah, that is one of the challenges. But, you know, I was halfway broke before the accident. You know, you can be broke in a lot of ways financially. But this is another way that is a financial challenge.
Now, getting grafts like you have done, there's always a fear of rejection. And you're in a situation where you've taken somebody else's face on that it's not quite the same, what's a good word for it, pigmentation that you had prior to that.
That's correct.
How apprehensive were you in even proceeding in this process?
Well, fortunately, again, what you want to believe, not you personally, but whoever. When I saw the car coming, going back to the accident, when I saw that car coming, and it, you know, the guy wasn't slowing down, I thought to myself, well, this looks like, you know, and as I was, these are in nanoseconds, of course,
mm-hmm.
This voice said, you're not going to die. And when the accident the impact came. I went up in the air, the car, you know, the whole car went up in the air and came down. So, and I'm still alive. And then about 2 or 3 seconds later, boom, car blows up. So I spoke to this boy saying, I thought you said I wasn't going to die. You know, because here's another, you know, surprise, this big old fire. And that's when I told you the voice said, go to the left. And I went to the left and a tunnel of fire, but I got out. Samaritan was right there to help me and escort me. So if you didn't have faith, I'll say in that voice, well, I guarantee you, if you personally experienced, then you would. That doesn't mean you can convince somebody else, you know. But so through that process, up until this point, I have had, if you will, a green light to go through the face transplant. We talked to many plastic surgeons, and all of them said that there's not a lot they could do except, because my lips are burned off, they could put a flap to cover and protect my gums and teeth. But it wouldn't have any control so that I could move my lips around. You know? So the last plastic surgeon who happened to be at Kaiser, and he's a friend of mine now, Dr. Walter Chang, he had a friend who had studied under my surgeon. My surgeon's name is Bolden Pomahawk. They talked among themselves, contacted Pomahawk. Pomahawk called me and felt that I might be a good candidate. So they invited me to come to Boston for a 3-day evaluation. I met with all, you know, all the directors of each discipline. And we had a good, you know, I was still weak. I couldn't walk, by the way. 2015, I still couldn't walk. And anyway, so I eventually had a 5-day evaluation, you know, months later. So it all seemed to have fallen in line, in spite of me being over 10 years older than anyone that they had ever done. So the domino effect was still quite alive. And so I didn't have the apprehension that, you know, maybe someone else might have. I didn't have to be talked into it or convinced, or, you know. But it seemed like I had been led this way. And I assure you, it's not like I'm looking for another surgery or another inconvenience.
No, I bet.
But I've been comforted in such a way that it doesn't matter what kind of challenge that might be before me, especially a physical challenge, because though I walk through valleys of shadows of death, I haven't had to fear evil.
Very well said. So how are you spending your days nowadays?
I'm still recovering. I do, of course, I talk with different companies, not as many companies as I do hospital students and other high school, middle school kids. I talk to other organizations health organizations about the possibilities of the great technology that's available. You know, one eye can see eight eyes.
How does that work?
There's so many different parts of our eye that can be applied to someone else. What one body itself can far exceed helping 50 different other people.
Different cadavers, skin grafts, bone.
That's right.
Yeah. I had a tooth pulled last week, and they had donor bone that it was ground up and sterilized, and that they could pack into the bridge of my jaw if I wanted to have that done. You know, it's.
Tell me
some of the stigmas that you find or have learned about through this process about organ donation.
Well, man comes up with all kinds, you know. That's just the way we are. We can claim that there's a religious concern. But that doesn't mean that those people are just so religious. You know, you're still sitting at the bar on Saturday night, in spite of how they might be in the choir on Sunday morning.
Yeah, very well said.
Yeah, so, you know, that, and of course, there are many legitimate concerns because of background experiences, the way others have been treated, especially certain ones have been more prioritized than others. You know, I mean, would you rather have a pretty face or not so pretty? I mean, that's just natural.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that are natural, we'd rather have our own than someone else's, and so on. So these preferential treatment can get way out of hand. Common sense doesn't actually apply. No more than when people say, well, you know, I try to love every guy, that's a lie. I mean, I believe they try, but what method are they using? Are they really focusing, concentrating? Are they giving their all to it? Or is it just it's like saying I try to be a good ball player, but you never practice. So people have their own ideas of what should be, should they do a female instead of a male? Or if one cries louder, do they get better attention? Or the position that they may hold? So these things are almost irreversible unless we deal with our own personal conviction about treating each other as best we can according to those circumstances.
Found some who you thought may have been a friend in the past when you went through this that were kind of that fake person when it came down to it?
Probably, but
your friends stuck with you, most of them?
Yes, and I think well, I'm convinced that kindness pays dividends that no man can measure. And there's a place for I'll give you an example. Friends have said to me that some of them have been mad with me or mad with the drunk driver. And they get mad with me because I don't have any reason to hold it against them. And they think I should.
You've forgiven the man who had 3 DUIs that put you in this current situation, correct?
I didn't forgive him because I didn't charge him with anything. Why would I? It was an accident.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things you did was worry about the person that hit you.
Well, I mean, but if a person is hurt, you know, It should be instinct to,
yep,
to see how that person's doing. There's no, you know, how many times have either one of us lied intentionally,
mm-hmm,
deceived,
manipulated,
said we're going to pay a bill and didn't pay it. No, we weren't going to pay it. Couldn't have the money to pay it. Hey, we have caused others to stumble throughout our life and still do. And yet, because I get twisted a little more than you got twisted, something's got to be done to him right now because he did this to me. And we didn't do it. God could have let that car swerve around me.
Yeah, there's no...
He didn't let me... It wasn't the guy... He was the vessel that car got hit and all that, but God let this happen. And I'm so glad he did.
What do you say to people that say, if there was a God, he would never do this to a person like you?
Well, obviously they're ignorant. What does ignorant mean? Slow to learn. Haven't quite comprehended yet. See? Because now, maybe their God, whatever in their head is a God. Maybe that God, I mean, you can dream up a lot of things. People paint pictures. Look at the pictures of what they call Jesus as a Michelangelo interpretation. Now, he's got all kind of beautiful. I don't think any of those apostles looked anything like handsome men because they were beat up all the time.
No, that's a good point.
They probably had all kinds of twisted arms and legs if they had any at all.
Yeah. Jesus looked like he had a hairdresser.
Yeah. So the imagination that man comes up with, oh, why would a God let you? Well, maybe you ought to switch your gods because I did go through this. And not only did I, but he provided this thread, if you will, of comfort in such a way that I had no complaints. You know, you've heard of terms like being on a mountaintop experience, and some people have been in a valley experience. Well, I discovered that there's lilies in the valley. Now, why would I want to leave that?
Yeah, it's perspective.
We're praying for you to completely return to normal, total recovery. Well, you're praying for the wrong thing because if you're going to pray that I enjoy the ride, that I see every corner of what God has provided for me in this valley experience. Thus far, it's been wonderful.
Robert, you're a strong man, for sure. I look up to you. Let me ask you a semi-tough question. But I don't think there's any tough questions for you to answer right now because I think you got a good grip on life and a great outlook. Do you feel anything spiritually about your cadavers? You know, the person that your face came from was a person that was troubled and tried to commit suicide, became brain dead. And then you've gleaned this person's face. Is there any part of you that has absorbed their spirit?
Well, I'm not sure where you got your data from.
Was that incorrect?
Well, I can't say whether it's correct or incorrect because I don't have that kind of data to consider. And HIPAA laws don't allow me to have it unless I talk with them direct.
I had heard that through researching prior to talking to you. So yeah. Sorry if I stepped out of bounds there.
Not at all. What you are sharing could be correct.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah. But
do you feel anything spiritually like that? Like some part of them is with you?
No, don't feel that. I see every day, I see this person that mm-hmm. doesn't look like the person I used to be. But, and so I'm still getting, my daughter still gets used to, you know, you can hear my voice, the tone, and so on. And they tell, oh, this is, you know. But other than that, I don't think I've taken on, like this hair, I didn't have any hair. I didn't have a beard, but this is his, you know.
It's different.
Yeah, I think I should share with you something that would be helpful to you and your audience too.
Please do.
The face transplant is so different than a lung, liver, kidney, and so on. Because one, you take one in and put one out. And also, it's internal. Nobody knows who has another liver, lung, heart. For me, this hair, I don't know if you can see, but this,
oh, yeah.
This is where all that started. So I have another chunk of my hair, side, forehead. This wasn't my nose. I have another nose, cheeks, another chin, lips. All of that is foreign to me. And it's not even lined up quite, you know, to the naked eye, it looks like it's not. But I'm used to, say, by taking a spoon and going here, well, but my lips are over here. And it's, so these little dynamics, idiosyncrasies, are visible to me, maybe not to someone else. But when they take a face, a donor's face, they prepare that donor's face by stripping it down. They prepare my face by stripping it down. And they have to sew every nerve and blood vessel, muscle, tendon, tissue. They have to put this all together from top to bottom.
Open. That's incredible. You start considering how deep it goes. You know, there's so much levels. It's just not slapping some skin on your head.
Right. So the medication has to vary depending on what's needed for this, may not be needed for that. And this, so, you know, like my lips, you see this lip, the bottom lip, I have to do this to keep the bottom lip tight, because the nerve endings and the blood vessels, you know, they have yet to, if at all, they have yet to control or start controlling the way yours might. And so, in the meantime, I make special, but I can smile. This is my smile. This is my pucker. My heart looks the same. So it's just a lot of the nerve endings and all these different, some of them have started working properly, some of them partially work, and some of them may not ever.
And what about your taste buds? You taste food?
Taste buds are a lot different.
But everything still tastes good to you?
No. And because my part of my tongue was wearing down, the tip of my...
Where a majority of those taste buds are.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Even for hot and cold, too.
Ah.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Well, Robert Chelsea, I really appreciate talking to you, and I hope we can do it again. You are such a great dude. Can you tell the people where they can get a little bit more information about you. I know there's robertchelsea.org is your website. You had a busy 2022 speaking with a lot of different organizations. Can you shout out a few of those that that you're working with and care about deeply?
Well, I care about them all. It's not the organization so much as if we can just inform individual souls that they are able to help so many just the willingness of donating their body upon their death. If they can do that, you don't have to ask for too much more. And so the organizations, most of them are for that purpose, whether large organizations or small. And most of them have been started by individuals like myself that have gone through certain challenges that have caused them to not only be appreciative of having a new life, and a lot of them are able to go right back to work, especially, you know, you get another heart, now you're ready to go again, or kidney, lung, and liver. So that's a little different, and because they appreciate it so much, they organize or they establish a foundation, hoping that somebody will respond and become a donor to help somebody else out. And because ethnic groups are so important, if another ethnic person didn't allow their family to donate their loved one's face, I wouldn't have one. So, certain stem cells can eliminate sickle cell.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that we all, every ethnic group, donate or increase the donation for each and every group, because everybody, humanity, has a diaspora that is disabled. I'll call them disabled diaspora. And that one eye can make them live again. You know what that means? There's a degree of self-confidence, self-esteem. They can look at their fellow neighbor eye to eye. Or they can embrace one another, go out together and not be different than the next person. And so why wouldn't we want something like that for our fellow man? You can go right back to the workforce. And some of them have been in conditions like that where they've never been in the workforce. So, yeah, we want to make sure that we encourage others to do that. The places that I've been last year were, I tried to go someplace once a month. I was at a roundtable discussion with Yale, and I was in Florida, Florida State University, with medical students there. I was at, of course, Brigham Women's Hospital, that's Harvard Hospital. And I tried to go to, I was at several high schools, and K through 8, middle schools. I've been at special ed schools. As a matter of fact, those special ed kids, they wrote notes and drew pictures and so on and mailed them to me while I was in Boston. And their teacher, you know, was so excited to contacted me and said, "Would I mind just saying hi to them?" Well, I tricked them. I said, "Well, why would I just want to get on the phone and say hi?" I drove to their school one day, and I let the teacher know, and the teacher let the principal know, and you know, and all that. But the kids didn't know.
And very so, cool. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So because remember, kids go through a lot of stuff. You know that. Bullies can bother you because you don't walk the same way, talk, look. You're not as athletic or, you know, take on the same interest.
Yep.
But they don't know that inside of this, these clothes that they're covered with, they could have been burned. A house fire, ironing board fire, a stove fire, barbecue, electrocutions. So much could have happened to them that would cause them not to be able to walk like the regular kids or talk like the regular kids and so on. This auto accident that I was in, you hear my voice now, my mouth opens about this wide. Now, the average person opens about that wide, and they can shoot like this. Well, mine opens this wide, and all I can do is this.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I eat. And I use a syringe to drink from. I'm beginning to learn how to use a straw, but I still can't use a bottle, drink out of a bottle or a glass, a cup, can't do that. So you never know, and did I cause that? No, but you never know what a youngster is going through. Now, that's one of the things I try to inform the kids to be considerate of others. Excuse me.
All right, sir, I'm going to let you go. I've taken a lot of your time. This has been great. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
And if they want to reach me, they can Google me. They can Google my name even. And that's a route to get to us as well.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to Bystander with Robert Chelsea and Timothy Self. Be kind.